Did you know that May and June are two of the busiest months of the year for wildlife rescuers, those intrepid and often indefatigable humans called on to undo some of what man has done to wildlife? In particular, hummingbirds, those tiny, multicolored, iridescent engineering miracles that can spiral into the air and then dive back down at 60 miles an hour. But those wings that beat into a blur need a lot of calories to survive. And when birds are injured, they have to be nursed back to health before release. If they're newborns without parents, rehabbers also have to teach them how to fly forwards and backwards. And sometimes would-be rescuers have to be taught when to leave hummingbirds alone. Longtime hummingbird rescuer and rehabber Terry Massier wrote about all of this in the fascinating Fastest Things on Wings, Rescuing Hummingbirds in Hollywood. And now, yay, it's out in paperback. Here's our talk with Terry last July. I cannot believe what a gripping read this is. It's like the Hunger Games for hummingbirds.
Well, that's nice to hear. I guess that's a compliment.
It is. Well, it opens with somebody on the phone with you as you realize that she's about 100 feet in the air on a pine tree on a cliff over the ocean. Why?
To rescue a nest of babies whose mother was trapped in her office and who died overnight.
The hummingbird was trapped in the woman's office, and you'd been, people call you. You're in the phone book. Rehabbers are. Had you studied hummingbirds? How did this happen?
No, I actually knew nothing about hummingbirds when I started. You know, my Abyssinian cat escaped from the house and brought a baby home and put it on the floor, and I didn't know what to do with it because it had come from outside. There was no way to put it back, so I located a rehabber. And then, of course, the next year, a baby got washed out of his nest in a ficus tree outside my house, and I became one of those crazy rescue people who had to climb up a ladder in a torrential downpour in my new wool suit that I had just put on for work that morning and bring him down and then take him to rescue. And after that, I got hooked. I became a rehabber myself.
Right, studying under Gene Roper, the rehabber that you'd brought a bird to. And keep that bird in mind, people. The one that you first...
That's a very special bird.
Yes. We'll tell why in a minute. But so now, just recount some of the people you hear from. Yes, a woman 100 feet in the air over a cliff. But what are the lengths that other people go through to get to save hummingbirds?
Well, a lot of people jump into swimming pools fully clothed because they think the hummingbird can't swim. And in fact, hummingbirds can't swim, but they can float for a very long time. There are people who've faced down Rottweilers in neighbors' yards, run through traffic, and grabbed a bird out off the pavement.
People who call you and say, "My children fell in love with this hummingbird outside our window at the feeder. I have to save this hummingbird or else my children will hate me for the rest of my life." I mean, what is the attachment that people have?
Well, hummingbirds are disarmingly gorgeous, and there's something about them that's different from other birds, of course, because their flight skills are so unique and they're such aerial acrobats. But it's more than that. There's something about them that grips our heart and makes us really have a meltdown when we see them in distress.
And you've become a hummingbird expert. What did you learn about them that surprised even you?
That would have to be their emotional intelligence. There were several birds who had post-traumatic stress disorder, birds who wouldn't leave the aviary because they were upset about what had happened to them, all kinds of memories like that that you wouldn't think a little hummingbird with a brain the size of a BB would have, and yet they don't forget anything that happened to them ever.
Maybe they don't forget you. There's a bird that you first saw with Gene Roper. And at the time, she said to you, "This is so unusual. This bird has such unusual coloring." And then this bird gets brought into you.
Right. Then he was returned because he had essentially migrated back to his birthplace. And then he got into a tangle with a limousine in Beverly Hills.
This is Gabriel, by the way. Yep.
So he was brought back to me. And because of his unusual markings, I knew that it was Gabriel. And in fact, his behavior when he came in was ridiculously familiar. He acted like we'd known each other forever. And I guess for him, we had. So.
In hummingbird time. Much of the book is also a cautionary tale. Sort of the subheadline could be, "Do not try this at home." Give me a sense of your typical day in June when there is the most rescue to be had because of hatchlings and such. What is your day like?
We get 20 birds a day sometimes in June. Then you're running them through an educational process from the ICU through flight cages through an outdoor aviary that's kind of a simulated reality. But you also spend a lot of time in emotional therapy with the birds because they have their traumatic experiences, and you have to coax them away from that fear and make them feel like they can get back out there and do it.
Well,
can live the wildlife.
So there's this emotional kind of encouraging them to go through the different steps of recovery. But every day, dozens of feeders have to be filled every 3 hours, washed at night. Formula has to be mixed, perches wiped down, plants trimmed and watered, bathtubs cleaned and filled, outdoor sugar feeders kept impeccably clean, cages scrubbed, mites removed. It's round the clock.
It's exhausting just hearing about it, Robin. The babies in the ICU have to be fed every 30 minutes, and that's just the beginning of the stress.
So, but you don't go out?
No, I can't go out. I became friends with people who lived close to me so that I could go to dinner in 20 to 30-minute increments.
So it's a lot of work, and some birds
sure
don't make it. You know, how do you make it through that?
That is the really hard part. 70% to 80% of our intakes get back out there healthy and strong, but the 20 or 30 that don't make it have to be, you know, kind of coaxed to a quiet end, and we just do it as compassionately and with as much love and humanity as we can.
That applies to rehabbers for every living thing. But then, on the other hand, these are wild animals, and you're very conscious of that. So how do you let them go? There was Pepper, a bird found in a catering dish. she'd been attacked by a male bird, which, you know, they can't distinguish between romance and attacks. And you ended up being very attached to her.
I did. Pepper and I bonded deeply. And one of the reasons I chose hummingbirds for rehabilitation is that they're not supposed to bond with people. But Pepper did. And Pepper wasn't the only one. Iris was another one. And Blacktop. And they all bonded. But Pepper was exceptionally close because of what she had gone through and because of the intense therapy I had to do with her. So, yeah, she was really unique.
So how do you let that, I mean, I can't imagine being that close to an animal, and then the goal is to let them go.
Yeah, well, then it's my turn to cry. Right?
Or the readers.
Yeah, exactly. You know, people cry when they bring them in, and I cry when I let them go.
Yeah.
So,
well, you've also learned so much that you want to impart to people. People think that babies are abandoned when they're not. What more do you want us to know about hummingbirds?
The main thing in rehab is to give people the caveat that you can't try to raise them yourself, because those are some of the most painful things we see in rehab, when people pick them up, take them home, and keep them too long because they think they're so cute. And I understand the attraction, but they've got to get to a rehabber right away if they're going to make it.
Well, that's hard sometimes. There was a woman who had projected her own abandonment issues on two nesting hummingbirds, and you're like, bring them in. And she...
Oh, I mean, this happens all the time. People project, and a lot of people believe that the hummingbirds are spirits of departed relatives who are inhabiting the hummingbirds that are outside. That's a really common belief. You wouldn't believe how often I hear that.
Really?
Yeah. Every day.
Well, so the biggest caution is bring them into a rehabber if they're hurt. Don't touch them because they may not be hurt. And call instead. How many calls do you get, like, in a season?
It depends on the time of year. By May, you're getting 10 to 20 a day, and June sometimes up to 50 a day, if you can believe it.
It's understandable that hummingbirds would be in danger. They weigh less than a nickel. You know, they do these elaborate things like barrel rolls and somersaults and 360-degree rotation in midair, and sometimes that doesn't go well. They have to eat 200 fruit flies a day, so you let bananas rot so that you can always have fruit flies for them. And caution again to people, don't feed them things like ants. It'll kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But given that they're so tiny, why do you think they have such a big impact?
They're just magical. Hummingbirds have been sacred in Western cultures forever, ever since humans crossed paths with them. And when you look at a hummingbird, it's like a miniature mirror of our lives. They look so vulnerable and so helpless, even though they can be really mean, as you know, around mm-hmm. feeders, and they're tough little guys. But when they're injured, they're the poster children for helplessness, and we have meltdowns when we look at them. I do, too, every time one comes into rehab. So I understand people's reactions that way. I never think people are too crazy anymore when they call me sobbing, because I've been there.
Yeah. That's Terry Mazier. Her book, Fastest Things on Wings, Rescuing Hummingbirds in Hollywood. Terry, again, what a read. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.
We did the whole segment just for that, Seals and Crofts. We spoke with Terry Mazier last July. Her terrific book is now out in paperback. It's here now.